Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Austin Cross, in for Larry Mantle, who's taking a much-deserved day off. So happy to have you with us. Coming up a little later in the hour, we're going to be talking about President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan. What could the decision mean for international relations? I'm willing to bet a whole lot. That's coming up. But first, an update on a situation that happened back in 2006. A black police officer in Buffalo intervened when she saw a fellow white officer using what she described as excessive force. Now, that officer who intervened was then fired not long after. Joining us now to tell us more about the situation and why we're talking about it now is Jonah Bromwich. He's a courts reporter for the New York Times. Thank you so much for being on with us today, Jonah.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Austin.
Well, so give us a little background on this story. What happened back in 2006 and what was the effect that that event had on the life of that officer?
So Officer Horn was a black police officer in Buffalo, and she responded to a scene where officers were calling for assistance. And what she saw was that the officers that handcuffed a black man and were treating him quite violently, they were punching him in the face. And then she says that she saw her fellow officer, who was white, put the man in a chokehold. And so she did what she felt was her duty to do. She intervened. She stopped him from applying that chokehold, that which she felt was dangerous. And for her efforts, she was rewarded by being fired by the police department in Buffalo.
And she believes that her firing, of course, it was based off of this event. So what does the judge's decision the other day mean for this officer who was wrongly fired?
So Officer Horn had brought this decision to a court once before and asked it to overturn her firing, and it had declined to do so. It affirmed what the police department had decided to do. And so they brought it back again. And this time a judge sided with her. And what he effectively has done is reinstated her. So she's not going to be a police officer again now. But this means that she will have essentially served the 2 years that she was unable to serve because of the prior decision, because of her firing. And what it really means is that she'll be eligible for the back pain benefit she didn't receive after she was terminated by the department.
If I recall properly, Jonah, she was fired right before she was able to take her full pension. And now her pension has been reinstated. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. She was just 1 year short when she was fired. So, and she lost out on a heck of a lot of money because of this. So the decision reverses that.
Well, obviously this is a major story, and this is something that we've talked about a lot, especially in light of the George Floyd killing just last year. And I'm wondering if the George Floyd incident had any effect in the situation, if it kind of loomed over all of the proceedings.
It very much did. The George Floyd killing was present in every stage of this particular matter when the court heard it. It was there in Officer Horn's lawyer's arguments. They cited it, and it was there in the judge's decision. He talked about what happened with George Floyd and gave it as part of the reason for why he decided the way he did.
And we're taking your questions and comments. If you are or were law enforcement, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this question of intervention when it comes to a colleague's use of force, the culture around it, and the practicality of it. Is this something you've ever dealt with? Give us a call, 866-893-5722. Again, that's 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Also joining me is Tommy W. Tucson. He's a retired chief of police in California with 30 years experience in law enforcement in cities like Calexico, Coachella, Southgate, and Arvin. And he's now a criminal justice professor at Bakersfield College. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Austin.
Well, in your experience, what has been the industry standard around the reporting of excessive force by other officers?
Whenever you have excessive force, period, or use, it's always supposed to be reported to the immediate supervisor. That immediate supervisor then analyzes it and then submits it up the chain of command, up to the chief's office for a review to find out if it was justified or not.
Now, you say that they're supposed to do that, but I'm wondering, based off of culture, and this may vary from department to department, but based off of the culture and the connection that officers have, often they are watching each other's backs. Do you think that it works this way, usually?
Sure. There's times police officers are human, and humans don't want to be caught up into any wrongdoing or misconduct. So a lot of times when they have a duty to expose, a duty to speak, they don't. And that cone of silence that has existed for many, many years in law enforcement has perpetuated itself. But when the officer understands the reasonableness of his or her actions, then it is reported, and they know that they have an obligation to report.
We're also taking your questions and comments. You can give us a call, 866-893-5722, or you can tweet us at AirTalk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. Tommy, what do you think about this case in Buffalo that we're discussing, and do you think that the judge's new ruling that Carryall Horn, former officer Carryall Horn's firing, was wrong?
Oh, absolutely. We have always said you use reasonable force, not excessive force. And we've been trained in our police academies and our continued training. So when you see that and you intervene, I've intervened myself in past instances where it got to be too excessive. And just think, but for her intervening, we might have had a George Floyd in 2006 in Buffalo.
I'm really curious if you've noticed a cultural shift in law enforcement over the years, because as I've read, after Officer Horn was removed from the department, the officer that she spoke out against ended up winning a defamation lawsuit against her for $65,000. And this was believed to be, you know, right and just at the time, but it seems unthinkable today. Do you think that the way that we think about police officers, the role that they should play in our communities, and also just the obligation that officers have to speak out if they see wrongdoing, do you think that the way that we think about these things has changed?
Yeah, it has. And I think the change started in 1990s with Rodney King, that when we saw five police officers assaulting a citizen for a traffic violation. The trend has been, it's always been a traffic violation and a minor violation that has led to many of the deaths of unarmed citizens by law enforcement. And this paradigm shift that we're now experiencing is like a ship that slowly turns. We started saying, wow, excessive force may become an issue in law enforcement and we better do something about it. But it just kept turning and turning. We never did. Now, I'd say since 2014, that ship has started turning faster, and now you're seeing change in law enforcement so that you can prevent what happened to the officer in Buffalo from happening to others, and that we do get justice, and we do get the protection against the excessive force actions by some officers.
I know that there were a number of unarmed killing of black men in 2014. Is that kind of the window that you're referring to?
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this, just within police departments, because obviously public opinion has shifted, but internally, do police think differently about their role now and you know how much they should be watching their colleagues when they're out in the field?
That's a very difficult question to ask and answer because it varies from agency to agency, from individual to individual. And a lot of law enforcement, and this is something I think is another issue we need to address, are feeling very defensive. The employment and recruiting of police officers is very difficult. When you look at all the legislation, the landslide public opinion against them is building, that adds pressure to an already tense situation. And I think we're going to have to address that impact because society does need law enforcement. We need police, but we need police to serve and protect with justice and fairness and not brutality.
We're taking your questions and comments here on Air Talk. You can give us a call at 866-893-5722, 866-893-5722. You can also tweet us at Air Talk or leave a comment on the Facebook page. And I'm talking right now with Tommy Tucson. He's a retired chief of police in California with 30 years of experience in law enforcement. Now he's a criminal justice professor at Bakersfield College. And Tommy, I want to ask you, last year, a California bill that would have enhanced use of force regulations was blocked here. Do you see future legislation playing into this issue? Do you see it having to come in order to make the change of perspective official?
Yes, I do. But like any legislated conduct, and they're trying to legislate conduct, the intent, I believe, is just and fair. But I think that the law, the statute itself, was a little overbroad as far as what it was intended to do. Agencies already have general orders policies. What they need to do is supervisors need to enforce the existing policies, and then the chain of command needs to hold them liable, accountable, if in fact they don't adhere to it. You talk about de-escalation. You talk about interceding. We've always kind of had that obligation when we see something, and it's always the reasonableness of the situation. And I think the agency's chain of command just need to actually hold officers accountable so that legislation doesn't legislate their conduct.
Definitely seems like there's a structural change that needs to happen. But culturally, I'm wondering about this warrior mindset that we've heard about. Is there a change of mindset that needs to happen within certain departments so that it's not really seen as an us against them sort of relationship when officers go out in the field?
Absolutely. I developed a concept called Transformational Policing Model, TPM. And it's what I present to various agencies in California, Sacramento PD being one of the agencies. And in that, one of the themes of my training is warrior to guardian. Police have been considered warriors because they felt the drug war and other acronyms that were used is what they did. My training focuses on going to being a guardian of society, to truly protect society, to believe in our constitution of fairness and believe in due process for all. And I couldn't agree with you more about warrior to guardian. And that's why I created a Transformational Policing Model.
You know, Derek Chauvin is currently on trial for the killing of George Floyd, and an officer has now been charged in the shooting of Dante Wright, both in the Minneapolis area. What do you see coming from these cases as it pertains to excessive force?
You know, to every action, there's an equal reaction. It's real difficult for a lot of us in law enforcement to see how you confuse your taser with your gun, but the human factor does take place. And again, that paradigm shift is coming, and now it's accelerated and been exacerbated because of the Dante Wright situation, because we see which way probably the George Floyd trial is going to take place. And I think, again, police agencies and the officers as humans are going to become very defensive about their actions. And I think one way to mitigate that is through the additional diversity, cultural, racial equity training that I provide and other entities in the country provide. We're going to have to make that training as important as crime scene investigation training or driving or firearms training is in a police academy.
Before we wrap up this conversation, I want to bring back in Jonah Bromwich. He's a courts reporter for the New York Times. And Jonah, I know that shortly before the officer, Carielle Horn, filed her lawsuit, she started pressing members of their local legislature to pass a so-called duty to intervene law. What is the status of that, and how did that push end up coming out?
So that's exactly right. She did that. And the Buffalo legislature took on that law and they passed it. And they passed it at a time when her lawsuit was still very much in progress. And it actually ended up informing her lawsuit. So it's a very unusual situation. She used a law that ended up being named for her and kind of honoring her actions back in 2006 to argue that those actions were in fact just, and ended up winning the decision based on partly on a law named for her. It's very unusual, very, very interesting thing to have happened.
Well, I want to ask you, Tommy, in the judge's ruling on the case, he used a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. It said, "The time is always right to do what is right." Do you see there being other challenges in the future as a result of this case? Maybe other officers who faced pressure within their departments after they called out their colleagues. Do you see changes happening internally from this point forward?
I'll begin my response with my favorite Dr. King quote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And as long as we keep that in mind and we move to being guardians in law enforcement, we're going to be good. And I think law enforcement really has to take a close look at what's being said nationwide, not put up that wall, not put up that barrier, but embrace understanding cultural differences through the training that I think is coming. And certain training is going to be mandated. I can see that coming from the George Floyd Act. And I believe that's the direction that we have to take to really take it seriously. And again, understand that this cultural sensitivity and competence training, this transformational training, is just as important as any other training that law enforcement gets.
That's Tommy Tucson, retired chief of police with more than 30 years of law enforcement experience in California. Also with me was Jonah Bromwich. He's a courts reporter for the New York Times. Thank you both so much for being with us today. And thank you for joining us on Air Talk. I'm Austin Cross, in for Larry Mantle, who's taking a much needed break. And there is more Air Talk to come right after this break.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.